May the words that I speak and the meditations of all of our hearts find favor with you, dear Lord. Amen. There's a theme that runs through all of today's lectionary lessons, and that theme is relationships, especially our relationship with God. Now, during Lent, we are all urged to examine our lives and examine our relationship with God and the ways in which that relationship affects and informs our lives. We find it first today in Genesis, the Old Testament lesson. It's a very personal story of God's relationship with Abraham, and it was written during a very dark period of Jewish history, at a time where the Jews were in exile and enslaved in Babylon, and they needed a reminder of God's covenant with them. They needed the renewal of God's promise to be with them, even in their exile. They needed hope, hope for the future, hope that indeed they would have a future. So we'll come back and dig a little bit more deeply into this Genesis covenant story, but first let's track the trail of relationships through the other lectionary readings. In the second reading in Romans, Paul says that faith is the basis of our relationship with God, and that it is through faith and belief in Jesus and his resurrection that the covenant that God made with Abraham is expanded to include the Gentiles, that now Gentiles are also included in God's covenant and are in relationship with God through Jesus. In the gospel lesson today, in Mark takes it a step further, and he says belief is just the starting point. It isn't just enough to believe. One has to put one's belief into action. One has to walk with Christ, even unto the cross. Now, we're not all expected to die for our faith, but we are all expected to live fully in our faith, to push against our human limitations, to go beyond our comfort zones, to do things that are difficult, even impossible, that are ludicrous, even laughable. And that brings us back to Genesis and the covenant story. In verses 1 through 7 in chapter 17, God comes to 99-year-old Abram and tells him that he's going to be in covenant with him, and that he's changing his identity, he's now going to be called Abraham, and that he will have a son and will be the father of nations. And in verses 15 and 16, he says that Abraham's wife, Sarai, will now be called Sarah, and she will bear a son and will be the mother of nations. Now, the intervening verses between 7 and 15 are really just hammering out the details of the covenant, of the relationship. God will give the Jews the land of Canaan, and the Jews, as a symbol that they are in covenant with God, all of their male family members and descendants will be circumcised. Pretty legalistic, quid pro quo. But then, verse 17 changes the tone completely, becomes very human. Abraham falls on the ground laughing at the notion, at the very idea that he, a 99-year-old man, and his 90-year-old wife will be fruitful and multiply and be the father and mother of nations. He laughs, which we might think of as a little bit irreverent, laughing at God. It seems to be the epitome of chutzpah. But you know, I think probably God laughed too, because laughter humanized the covenant. Laughter sealed the deal. Laughter humanized the relationship. The power of laughter. Laughter goes beyond words, beyond cultures, beyond languages. It's a powerful communicator. I discovered that as a young Peace Corps volunteer in India over 50 years ago, when my Peace Corps partner Kathy and I were assigned to work in a poultry development project in a small village in India. And 85% of the people in that village were Hindus and really didn't want anything to do with our chickens or our eggs. And so after several weeks in India, we were beginning to question what we were doing there. We were having difficulty with the language and the culture, and we were beginning to question and doubt our mission. And we could identify with the Jews in exile in Babylon, because we too felt like strangers in a strange land. We'd only made one friend, a Muslim gentleman by the name of Vorasaib, and he occasionally invited us to dinner. We always eagerly accepted because it was the only meat we ever got. So one evening we were there having dinner, and after dinner, people began to come into the house. It was a small house, and people began to pour in. Mostly Muslims, but there were a couple of Hindu families, and I think even a Christian family. And Vorasaib said, "They're here for the boat race." And we said, "Boat race? We're in the middle of the desert." And his two sons brought in this large basin filled with water. And Vorasaib took out two small balsa boats, and he put one at one end of the basin, the other on the other side of the basin. And he said, "Now, go ahead, kneel down at the signal, prepare to blow, and let's see who can get their boat to the other side first." Well, Kathy and I were both pretty competitive people, so we got down and prepared, and the signal was given, and we started to blow, and the crowd was low. They were laughing. They were cheering us on. And we were totally focused, blowing those boats, blowing. We were totally focused. The crowd was going wild, and all of a sudden a hand came down, slapped the water. Both the boats went flying out of the basin, and we were drenched. And we sat back on our heels, and people were laughing hysterically. And Kathy said to me, "I think we have just become the victims of a very old village trick." And I said, "Well, that may be, but I was still winning." We both started to laugh. They laughed, we laughed, and that laughter made all the difference. We turned the page. We laughed, and we no longer felt so strange. We laughed and began what has been over a 50-year relationship and love affair with India and the people in our village. And laughter sealed the deal. Laughter is a very, very, very powerful form of communication and connection. It can help us not only during sad times, but also glad times and difficult times, times that are emotionally complicated, times that words just can't express. And laughter can help to bridge that gap. My mother was a great believer in the power of laughter. She had a great sense of humor. She told wonderful stories. As kids, we would laugh and laugh, and we'd beg her, "Mama, Mama, tell us one more, just one more story." And she'd always say the same thing. She'd always say, "You gotta leave them laughing. and wanting more. In her 79th year, she was diagnosed with terminal colon cancer. And she elected to go into hospice care in Albany, where Susan and I were living. And my sister Nancy came up from Florida to be with us. And during the next few weeks, we were able to keep Mom comfortable, and Mom was in very good spirits. She was a woman of firm faith. She was not afraid. And she kept us laughing, telling us those old stories, and Susan played the piano for hours, and we sang those old Methodist hymns that my mom loved. And it was a good and even a joyful time, and we were able to assure her and reassure her that we would be okay, that she had taught us well, that we would take care of one another, not to worry. And as she gradually grew weaker, we continued our reassurance, not to worry. The last day of her life, she said and kept saying, "I've got to go. I've got to go now. I've got to go." And we said, "Mama, it's okay. We understand. Go ahead. Go ahead. We understand. Go ahead. We'll see you on the other side. Go ahead. You've got to go. Go." Soon after, the hospice nurse came in and we said to her that Mom was saying that she had to go. And the hospice nurse looked down and she said, "Oh my God, yes, of course she has to go. The catheter is blocked." She quickly unblocked the catheter, and indeed Mom did have to go, and she went copiously. She had to go. She had to go in more ways than one. And we looked at Mom, and she heaved this huge sigh of relief. And she smiled, and she died. And what was our reaction? Our beloved mother had just died, and we broke out into uncontrollable laughter. We could not stop. She had to go. We laughed. And we realized, once again, Mom had left us laughing and wanting so much more. So, folks, during your Lenten journey this year, as you examine your life and examine your relationship with God and with others, don't forget about the power of laughter. Laughter is a form of prayer. Theologian Reinhold Niebuhr said that humor is the beginning of faith, and laughter is the beginning of prayer. And our own Martin Luther said, "If there's no laughter in heaven, I don't want to go there." So let me suggest to you folks, if you're giving up anything for Lent this year, for God's sake and for your own, don't let it be laughter. May the Lord add his blessing. Amen.